Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Upton Sinclair's The Jungle is a landmark American naturalist novel first published in 1906, set primarily in Chicago's meatpacking district. It follows the Lithuanian immigrant Jurgis Rudkus and his family as they confront exhausting labor, exploitative employers, debt, illness, corruption, and repeated personal loss. Although Sinclair hoped to stir sympathy for immigrant workers, and to advance socialist criticism of industrial capitalism, the novel became famous for its exposure of the meat industry and the public outrage that followed. It is both a work of fiction and a forceful social document, blending narrative realism with direct political purpose. The Penguin American Library edition keeps the book accessible for modern readers while preserving its historical importance as a major example of muckraking literature. Its enduring value lies in how it connects individual suffering to broader systems of labor exploitation, urban corruption, and consumer vulnerability. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the immigrant promise collapses under industrial labor. The novel begins with a familiar American dream narrative. A newly arrived immigrant family expects that hard work in the United States will bring stability, dignity, and upward mobility. Sinclair quickly dismantles that expectation. Jurgis and his family discover that the labor market is not a meritocracy, but a system structured to extract as much labor as possible while offering little protection in return. Wages are low, jobs are unstable, injuries are common, and workers can be discarded the moment they become sick or exhausted. This matters because the novel does not present poverty as a personal failure. Instead, it shows how industrial capitalism converts ambition into dependency by tying survival to precarious employment, debt, and repeated crises. The result is a sustained critique of the idea that honest effort alone guarantees success. In that sense, the family's descent is not just tragic, it is explanatory. Sinclair uses their experience to show how immigrant hope is manipulated by a system that benefits from desperation. Secondly, meatpacking as a system of hidden danger and public deception. One of the novel's most influential concerns is its exposure of the meatpacking industry. Sinclair describes slaughterhouses, rendering rooms, and processing spaces as sites where speed and profit override sanitation, safety, and basic human decency. The point is not merely that the work is unpleasant. It is that industrial production encourages concealment. Unsafe meat can be transformed into saleable product because consumers are far removed from the conditions of production. This separation between production and consumption is central to the novel's social criticism. Workers see the filth, injury, and waste directly, while buyers encounter only the finished commodity. Sinclair uses that gap to show how modern industry can make dangerous practices seem ordinary and invisible. The outrage the book provoked over food safety reflects this mechanism precisely. Readers were shocked not just by the conditions in the plants, but by the idea that the market itself could hide contamination and fraud. The novel therefore functions as both a narrative and an argument about the need for public regulation when private profit controls essential goods. Thirdly, corruption extends beyond the factory floor into the whole city. The jungle is not limited to workplace abuse. Sinclair broadens the novel into a portrait of an entire social order in which power protects itself. Employers, real estate agents, police, judges, politicians, and foremen are often depicted as part of the same moral and economic ecosystem. This matters because it shows exploitation as institutional rather than accidental. Jurgis and his family are not only mistreated by one cruel boss or one dishonest landlord. They are caught in a web of legal, political, and commercial arrangements that repeatedly penalize the poor. Even when the family tries to act responsibly, the surrounding system works against them through deceptive contracts, wage theft, blacklisting, and indifference to suffering. Sinclair's broader point is that industrial capitalism depends on more than factories. It requires civic corruption, weak accountability, and institutions that normalize abuse. By presenting corruption as pervasive, the novel makes reform seem necessary at every level, not just in the meat industry. The critique is structural, showing how private greed and public authority can reinforce one another. Fourthly, naturalist realism turns family breakdown into social evidence. Sinclair writes in a strongly naturalistic mode, meaning that characters are shaped by forces larger than individual will, including environment, economics, and social hierarchy. The novel's power comes from this method. Jurgis is energetic, strong, and determined, yet those qualities do not protect him from collapse. Family members suffer illness, injury, unemployment, loss of savings, and emotional exhaustion in ways that feel cumulative and inescapable. The narrative does not depend on sentimental melodrama alone. It uses repeated hardship to demonstrate how quickly one crisis can trigger another when no safety net exists. That structure gives the novel analytical force. Each breakdown in the family reveals something about the system: housing fraud, workplace injury, child labor, gendered vulnerability, and the cost of medical neglect. Sinclair makes private misery legible as public evidence. Even when the plot becomes intensely personal, it keeps pointing outward to the conditions that produce such suffering. This is one reason the novel remains influential. It shows how fiction can document social reality by dramatizing the connection between individual lives and institutional pressures. Lastly, the political ending reveals Sinclair's reformist and socialist agenda. The novel is famous not only for what it exposes, but also for the political conclusion it reaches. Sinclair ultimately argues that individual effort cannot correct a system built on exploitation, and he turns toward socialism as the implied alternative. This ending is sometimes criticized for being more explicit and programmatic than the rest of the book, but it is important to understand it as part of the novel's design. Sinclair was writing as a reformer, not a detached observer, and he wanted readers to see the labor crisis as a political problem rather than a private misfortune. The ending, therefore, clarifies the book's purpose. Reform requires collective action, not isolated moral improvement. At the same time, the novel's lasting influence came from a partial mismatch between authorial intention and public reaction. Many readers focused on food safety rather than socialism, which helped drive legislative reform while leaving Sinclair's broader political hopes unrealized. That tension gives the book a unique place in American literature. It is both a socialist novel and a catalyst for mainstream regulatory change, showing how literature can influence policy even when its stated ideology is only partly accepted. In conclusion, The Jungle is best suited to readers interested in American literature, labor history, immigration, social reform, and the origins of modern food regulation. It is especially valuable for anyone who wants to understand how fiction can expose the human cost of industrial capitalism while also influencing public policy. Readers looking for a straightforward historical novel may be surprised by its argumentative force, but that is part of what makes it distinctive. Unlike many novels about poverty, it does not treat hardship as isolated bad luck. Instead, it links personal collapse to labor exploitation, urban corruption, consumer deception, and the failure of institutions that should protect ordinary people. That combination gives the book unusual range. It is a family tragedy, a social indictment, and a reform text at once. Compared with other protest novels, it stands out for the scale of its real-world impact and for the clarity with which it connects production, power, and public health. Even today, it remains useful for readers who want to think seriously about supply chains, worker vulnerability, corporate accountability, and the gap between market efficiency and humane treatment. If you would like to support Upton Sinclair, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.